Yeah. Yeah. What? Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hello there. Hi. Welcome to another episode of the Lavender Fix podcast. I'm your host, Sabreen Hazik, and this episode has been a highly requested one. All things PCOS, that is polycystic ovary syndrome. Polycystic ovary syndrome is a condition in which the ovaries produce an abnormal amount of androgens, that is male sex hormones, usually present in women, but in small amounts. The name polycystic ovary syndrome describes the numerous small cysts that are fluid-filled sacs that form in the ovaries. However, some women with this disorder don't necessarily have cysts, while some women without the disorder do develop cysts. Let me explain this. Ovulation occurs when a male egg is released from an ovary. This happens so it can be fertilized by a male sperm. If the egg is not fertilized, it is sent out of the body during your period. And in some cases, a woman doesn't make enough of the hormones needed to ovulate. When ovulation doesn't happen, the ovaries can develop into small cysts. These cysts make hormones called androgens. And women with PCOS often have high levels of androgens. This can cause more problems with a woman's menstrual cycle. And it can cause many of the symptoms of PCOS. Today, I have with me Talene and her husband, Sirak. A little bit about Talene first. She is a PCOS weight loss registered dietitian and a strong believer of the fact that you don't just have to live with PCOS because you can thrive with PCOS. She was diagnosed at the age of 18 and was left worried, confused, without much information or guidance from her practitioner. And she was so unsatisfied with the generally accepted belief that birth control is the only way to manage PCOS that she decided to look for alternative options. And Sirak is a PCOS personal trainer and a strong supporter of women struggling with PCOS. A former engineer, Sirak has repurposed his skills and applied his creative genius to editing and producing the content within their membership portal and on social media. Today, Talene and Sirak are here with us to share the fruits of their knowledge around PCOS. Hi, Talene and Sirak. Thank you so much for joining me. It's so great to have you guys on the show. How are you?
We're good. Thank you for having us.
Yes, thank you for having us on the podcast.
Yeah, no, very exciting. And I must say that, you know, this is one of the most highly requested episodes and topics. And so, Talene and Sirak, first of all, I noticed that you call your community or your tribe sister with a C, which is so clever and creative. And in my introduction to this episode, I gave our listeners a little bit of a download on what PCOS really means. But since we have you guys here today, the experts, please enlighten us and educate us on what PCOS really means and what the root causes are.
Yeah, of course. So PCOS is an endocrine disorder that's triggered by genetic and environmental factors, and it manifests as having high androgens, high male hormones. Mm-hmm. And so the way that you can get diagnosed with PCOS is if you have two out of the three symptoms. So that's ovarian cysts, hyperandrogenism, or irregular periods. So if you have two out of the three, that's how you would get diagnosed.
Mm-hmm. And what do you think are the most common misconceptions associated with PCOS at a high level?
Well, a lot of doctors actually feel that if you have ovarian cysts, then you have PCOS, but that's not really the case. And in fact, they're looking into changing the name of PCOS, polycystic ovarian syndrome, to something that's more all-encompassing, that kind of sheds light on the metabolic dysfunction that's going on, because a lot of women with PCOS have symptoms like weight gain that they can't control because of their hormonal issues. Mm-hmm. And when they're told to lose weight to manage their hormones, it's difficult to actually lose the weight because of their hormones. So shedding light on metabolism and how that plays a role in the PCOS symptoms is really important, because a common misconception is thinking that maybe a woman with PCOS isn't trying hard enough to lose weight. And that's where our method kind of comes in, with the way we do the workouts, the way we've designed meal plans, and how we recommend gluten and dairy free and trying that out.
Now, I've heard a ton about, you know, PCOS. And in fact, a couple of years ago, I think I missed one of my period cycles. And when I went in for a checkup, my scans showed multiple cysts and enlarged ovaries. And to top that off, I've always had facial hair, but never really had irregular periods or any crazy heavy menstruation cycles. And so quite frankly, I've just always been very confused about how PCOS is really diagnosed and if I really have it, you know, especially because, as you just shared, you know, it's not just about the cysts. So how is PCOS really diagnosed, and why is it often misdiagnosed or misunderstood?
So when it comes to PCOS, the thing that makes it really difficult to diagnose is that, one, it's a spectrum. It's a wide spectrum of different symptoms, hence why it's called a syndrome. So because it's a spectrum, it's really hard for doctors to pinpoint or find go-to diagnosis or means of therapy that works for everyone. But with that being said, there is the Rotterdam criteria, which speaks on 2 out of 3 symptoms to be diagnosed with PCOS. The 2 out of 3 are hyperandrogens, you know, elevated male hormones, irregular periods, and ovarian cysts. So having those 2 out of 3 almost guarantees that there may be PCOS. Of course, it's always best to consult with your doctor, but just having that wide spectrum of symptoms, you know, some women have, you know, more severe hair loss, or while some others have, you know, more irregular periods, it makes it more difficult to pinpoint and find like a point of resolution that works for everyone.
And Sirak, is PCOS curable? Can it be cured?
Well, there is no cure for PCOS, unfortunately. However, it can be put into remission. You can reverse your PCOS symptoms as long as you find a diet and lifestyle approach that works for you. It's just about maintaining that diet and lifestyle that's going to basically work for the rest of your life in order to keep it in remission. Fortunately, it is treatable to the point where you can reverse your symptoms. It's just not something you can cure forever, and it's something that's not going to come back. It can come back if you don't keep taking care of yourself.
So it's more about management then, right?
Yeah, that's correct.
All right. So Talin and Sirak, you know, you guys have dedicated your career to helping women navigate the complex challenges that accompany PCOS. And Talin, I read on your website that, you know, you have a very personal experience with PCOS. So what has that been like? What has your journey been like? And what did you do personally to reverse it or to manage it better?
Yeah, my journey was long, basically, and it took a lot of time, trial and error, to figure out what's going to work for me and what's not going to work for me. And at the time, there wasn't a lot of information about PCOS out there. Mm-hmm. But when I was first diagnosed, it was about 10 years ago, and I had ovarian cysts and one ruptured. And so it sent me to the emergency room, and that's how I was diagnosed with PCOS. Mm-hmm. And from there, I was just given birth control and not really given an explanation of what's going on. And I had committed to, you know, study becoming a registered dietitian, but my own health was falling apart and I wanted to know what was happening, because I was taking birth control, but, you know, like, what was actually happening if I had gotten off birth control? So I eventually decided to get off to figure it out, and all my symptoms came like with a intense vengeance. You know, cystic acne, weight gain that I couldn't control, mood swings and hair loss and facial hair and acne. You know, it was all there. And I started asking the gyno, like, what's going on? And I wasn't getting answers. So I had to go to a naturopathic doctor. And I went to several just to get several opinions because it was new to me, naturopathic doctors. So they all told me to go gluten and dairy free. They all told me about these great supplements that I could take. And they explained how blood sugar control plays a major role in this. And mm-hmm. with that, you know, stress management also affects blood sugar. So it's not just diet, it's also lifestyle. So it took me some time to adopt to the gluten and dairy free lifestyle. It took me about a year to really like get it down, but my everything was getting better. And I wasn't exactly back to my goal weight or, you know, what I used to weigh. So it did take time to get there. And I was doing really intense workouts. And it wasn't until I met my husband, who is a PCOS personal trainer now, and he had taught me how to do slow weighted workouts. And that really got my body to, you know, first of all, to have definition, but also that muscle helped with my insulin resistance so much. Right. So even though gluten and dairy free reduced inflammation, helped with insulin resistance, like it didn't really end there. Like I had to add on the weights and then add on, you know, getting in my steps. You know, later on, I learned that like that really influences my weight too, and stress management. So it took a lot of time to put the pieces together. And that's why at this point, you know, I specialize in helping women with PCOS so that it doesn't take them years to figure out all the different components that help with PCOS. And that's how we designed our method.
Right. And I think it's remarkable because PCOS affects more women than we think it does, right? It's actually very common. I don't know a single woman in my circle who doesn't have it. So obviously, you know, there is a lot of the times there is a lot of stigma around it. And I'm really glad that, you know, what you're doing is in a way destigmatizing it and really focusing on the solutions. I wanted to, you know, take a moment to just talk about your company and your partnership with your husband, Sirak, on this initiative to empower women with PCOS, right? How is this idea to start something like this born, and why is it so close to your heart?
Well, I started this, right after I got my license as a registered dietitian, but the idea was born from my experience and my ability to reverse my symptoms and really the lack of information that was out there. Mm-hmm. And, you know, along the way, I met my husband, and he's very, you know, into health and hopped right on board with the gluten and dairy free the day I told him on our first date, and super supportive of everything. And it basically unfolded, you know, after we got married, and he's really involved with the business, and now we're partners together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like really working together towards one mission. It really makes it a lot more enjoyable because I used to be a mechanical engineer. I spent 10 years being an engineer, and I quit my job about 6-8 months ago, and like I haven't been this happy in a long time, just because it's a lot more fulfilling to help others. And it's something more along the lines of what we're both interested in, and just doing it together really makes it more enjoyable and more fun.
Yes, and I can most certainly tell that you guys are enjoying this because I have extensively gone through your feed on Instagram, and you guys are always being silly and funny, and, you know, at the same time, you're also imparting a lot of knowledge. 100%, like, you guys do you. I think that's fantastic that you found your passion. And I mean, it's phenomenal that you guys are partners, not just in business, but also in real life. And I think that makes it so much more enjoyable, right? So let's go back to the topic of misdiagnosis for a second. Of course, you should seek medical intervention if you think you have PCOS. But Taline, aside from the three main symptoms that you talked about, are there any other things that people can say, okay, I'm now noticing that I'm feeling this way, or this is happening? And are there any additional symptoms aside from the ones you talked about that can help push people, you know, to make that decision to go see a doctor or to get medical assistance?
Well, basically, you know, you can kind of know, not necessarily, because you wouldn't know if you have ovarian cysts until you got an ultrasound, but you'll know if you have hyperandrogenism because your hair will be falling out, cystic acne, you know, facial hair, mood disorder, things like that will manifest, and especially not being able to lose weight. And then irregular periods, of course, you would know that as well. So given those symptoms, you could really, you know, figure out if you have PCOS and make an appointment with your doctor, especially if you're not able to lose weight, because like there's so many hormonal issues that could be going on. It could be hypothyroid, it could be anything. So it's really important to get blood work done and figure out what's going on and not just blame yourself that you can't lose weight, because there's so many components that play into it. You know, high stress hormones, high DHEA, that's hyperandrogenism. Like this can all affect your ability to lose weight.
Right. And then also, of course, I guess, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but women who have PCOS also often tend to have a high prolactin level.
Yes.
Right. So that's also something. So so my question again is that if someone, let's just say, has PCOS and they don't know yet, and they go in for a blood test, and, you know, let's just say that blood test is not necessarily for PCOS. If there is an imbalance with their thyroid, is that an indication that they may also have PCOS? Because if weight gain is one of the things that comes with it, then a imbalance in your thyroid hormones can also affect that, right?
Right. So just because you have hypothyroidism doesn't mean you have PCOS, but it can lead to PCOS-like symptoms.
Okay.
Weight gain, regular periods, mood issues, things like this. So you would really have to consult your doctor to figure out if it's hypothyroidism and PCOS, which is very common. Around 30% of women with PCOS have a thyroid problem as well, or if it's just hypothyroidism.
Mm-hmm. So I have two questions now. One of them is, of course, related to, you know, you talked about birth control, and we'll get to that in a second. But when something is misdiagnosed very commonly, it also often is accompanied by a lot of ambiguous treatment options. So if you had to give a breakdown of, you know, current common practice treatments or different solutions that are offered by doctors for PCOS, what would they be?
Oftentimes, it's just birth control. Sometimes, okay, when they see ovarian cysts, I've heard of doctors suggesting hysterectomies, which is completely unnecessary.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of crazy things going on out there. You really have to be an advocate for your health and do your own research and not just do whatever the first doctor tells you to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and some of the treatment options aren't really based on getting down to the root cause. So as Tommy mentioned, birth control and even metformin, these are prescriptions that generally don't really get down to the root cause of what's causing the irregular periods or what's causing the hyperandrogenism and things of that nature. When doctors prescribe birth control, it's more of a, oh, just wait till you want to get pregnant kind of a treatment plan, because it just basically... you're basically masking the issue and pumping the body full of synthetic hormones and giving a fake bleed. So you're not really fixing the period issue. And what really happens is, so that person goes on birth control for, let's say, 5-10 years until the day they want to get pregnant. So they get off the birth control, and now all the symptoms they had before they come back even worse, because over time, the issues just snowball, unfortunately. And then... Once they get off the birth control, now they're left with worse symptoms, and now they're trying to get pregnant, or they're just trying to get their periods regular again. And that's where a lot of the difficulty comes for those trying to, improve their fertility and just, you know, be in control of their body as well.
Mm. And on social, I've noticed, you know, a couple of your posts where you guys have talked about, you know, birth control does not fix PCOS, right? As you were just stating. So that is essentially the opposite of what people are told, of course, right? Exactly what you're saying. I think everything you just talked about, Sirak, it all sounds very familiar. I think I've been through the same drill. I've taken birth control in the past. I've been on, you mentioned another drug, but I think it's called something else in India, but it sounded very similar. So those things sound very familiar to me. Now, why, like, what is it about birth control? Birth control is obviously taken so you get your period on a specific day. And you said that that is essentially not really giving you a real period. It's just a fake period in a way, right? So what is it about birth control? What does it do to your body? How, why do doctors think that it's helping, but it's really not?
It's basically blocking, so it's synthetic hormones that are blocking the receptor sites on your organs, the receptor sites for hormones, and it's taking over your hormonal rhythms. So instead of, you know, having a spike in estrogen and then a spike in progesterone and a dip in estrogen, you know, there's a whole cycle that goes on before your period that triggers a real period. And these are all very important for metabolism, bone health, heart health, brain health, the health of a woman. So birth control cancels all of that out. And then, you know, once you take the sugar pills, you know, you get that drop and you get your period. And that's basically what's going on when you take the pill. There's no rhythms happening in your body, those natural female rhythms.
And just to add on to that, was the invention of birth control, the invention was never intended to, quote unquote, balance women's hormones or give them periods. Yeah, the intention of birth control when it was invented, I forget the year, but in the 1940s, 1950s, the intention was mainly as a contraceptive purpose. Like there was no purpose of trying to, you know, help women get their periods. The whole point was for contraceptive reasons. And then later in the century, in the 1970s, 80s, pharmaceutical companies got more power to basically advertise in commercials, on TV, you know, with the introduction of, you know, mainstream television as well as radio and all these things. So they got the power to commercialize and market more. And they, as a tactic, they changed up their marketing for birth control to help women balance their hormones and get their periods. But this was never the intention. The intention was just for contraception. So with that being said, it's been, going back to what we said earlier, the whole point of birth control has been now, you can say, like, manipulated to think, to make people think that it will help them with their hormones, balance their irregular periods and so forth. But unfortunately, long term, it doesn't do that. And it can only make things worse for some people who are trying to get down to the root cause of their PCOS and other symptoms.
Right. You can't really repurpose treatments to fit other illnesses or disorders, right? I completely agree. I completely agree. And you guys talked about, you know, weight gain, for example, or weight management, which is directly generally tied to your metabolism, right? So, you know, you said that PCOS affects a woman's metabolism, essentially. So what happens in the body? What does it do to sort of thwart a proper metabolic rate?
Can you repeat that? What does it do to support a metabolic rate?
Support, like basically thwart or block a healthy I'll repeat that question. So, you know, obviously, weight gain or weight management is generally tied to your metabolism. And you were suggesting that PCOS affects a woman's metabolism. And that's one of the reasons why the weight gain happens, right? So what does PCOS really do in your body for it to affect the metabolism? Why does it slow it down?
That's a great question. And I love answering this because many women with PCOS aren't given this introduction to their metabolism and what's going on and kind of blamed that they're gaining weight. So basically, we have often with PCOS, 70 to 80% of us women with PCOS have insulin resistance. And when you have insulin resistance, your cells are resistant to the hormone insulin that's trying to give the cells sugar from your bloodstream to burn up for energy. And so when your cell isn't burning that up for energy, that goes and stores as fat around your organs, around your midsection, you know, abdominal weight gain is very common. And then that insulin hormone that's unable to do its job goes to the ovaries and triggers high testosterone, and then we have hyperandrogenism, and then we have PCOS symptoms. We have the ovarian cysts and ovulation, not being able to ovulate, where we start having high testosterone, so that means facial hair, acne, hair loss, things like this. So insulin resistance is something that we can control, and we have direct control over it all the time. So it's about what time you eat, what, how you pair your foods, and so on. So oftentimes we're told to cut out carbs to treat this blood sugar issue that insulin resistance is. And that's really not the only solution for it. So there's so much we can do. We don't need to restrict ourselves of all carbs. That's just the shortcut, and it's temporary, and, you know, it doesn't last forever. So, you know, you can pair your carbs with protein. So you're having chicken with your rice. You can lower your carbs a little bit and see if that helps instead of severely lowering them, because that could be stressful for your body and then trigger blood sugar issues. You make sure you have a breakfast, lunch, dinner, maybe a snack in between, and make sure you're not starving before your next meal. And all of these things help with blood sugar. And so my point is, if you don't have your blood sugar under control, then your insulin resistance won't be in control. And that's where the weight gain starts. The fat starts accumulating in your stomach area and so on. And it affects stress hormones, and that causes weight gain too.
So Talin, when people go for their annual checkups, for example, and they get their blood sugar levels checked, right, as part of the routine checkup, if someone has PCOS, should it show up right away?
No, actually, blood sugar will identify insulin resistance at the late stages. So when you're borderline diabetic, and you don't want to wait till then, you can have the slightest bit of insulin resistance, and that could be triggering PCOS symptoms. So what you want to do is get an insulin glucose tolerance test instead, and that will reflect and tell you if you have a bit of insulin resistance or a lot or whatever. So you can't wait for the A1C test or the fasting glucose test. That's not going to reflect insulin resistance until way later in the game. And if you can't get the test, insulin glucose tolerance test, you can deduce if you have insulin resistance. You know, if you have really bad cravings, if you feel like your blood sugar is high and low and you're hungry all of a sudden, and these are all signs of insulin resistance.
Okay, that's really helpful, because I think people go for their annual checkups and the reports come out fine, and they're like, oh, it's totally fine. Like, I probably don't have this. But I think that specific test that you were talking about, I think it's really worth investing in just to figure out if you really have it. Right? Because all of these things are tied together, as you were mentioning. Now, I heard you guys talk a little bit about, you know, fertility. Like, Sirak, you were talking about how a lot of the times doctors will prescribe you drugs that kind of mask the symptoms. And then only when you're ready to get pregnant is when people really address it. Right? So what about fertility? Does PCOS make getting pregnant harder? Is it true? Is it an overstated argument? What is it?
Well, it can definitely make it harder for someone with PCOS. And it is, PCOS is the largest, is the biggest hormonal disorder for women trying to get pregnant. So when it comes to the fertility aspect, that is more of a symptom of a lot of the other underlying issues that's happening with PCOS. Specifically, one of them can be insulin resistance. As Tan was explaining earlier, this can create, one, it can create an increase in testosterone, leading to, you know, hyperandrogenism and other aspects. And
that contributes to not being able to ovulate, basically. And then you'll struggle with getting pregnant. So like Sirak, that all of those will trigger that, and then you'll struggle to get pregnant, but that doesn't mean you can't reverse it. You can totally reverse it with all the ways that I just mentioned, with healing insulin resistance and managing stress hormones and so on.
And you know, you were talking about kind of gluten and dairy, so I would like to get into that. We live in a world where gluten and dairy are often considered the enemies. What is wrong with consuming items that contain gluten or dairy, especially if you don't have celiac disease or dairy intolerance?
Yeah, so gluten and dairy, studies have shown, can trigger inflammation, can contribute to insulin resistance, and women with PCOS are already struggling with these things, inflammation, insulin resistance, and so cutting out gluten and dairy can give you an edge in fighting those symptoms. And so basically, everyone with PCOS doesn't necessarily need to cut out gluten and dairy forever. But it's good to know if you're sensitive to it by cutting it out for 30 days and then adding it back in and seeing if your symptoms flare up or if you saw a difference within those 30 days. That way you'll know if you're sensitive to gluten and dairy. And so if you don't figure that out, then all of the things that you're doing to help with your PCOS, from the supplements to the doctor appointments to the different diets and all these things, they won't really work as effectively because you're eating the foods that are triggering the PCOS symptoms and flaring them up. So, for example, when I cut out gluten and dairy, I saw a major difference in my skin, in my mood, in my weight. And so no matter what I did before, like all the workouts and stuff, they didn't help at all with weight loss, because I was eating gluten and dairy. So
yeah, and just to expand on that too, so gluten and dairy happen to be two of the biggest food groups that can impact insulin as well as inflammation. As we were explaining earlier, up to 80% of women with PCOS have insulin resistance, and almost all women with PCOS have some type of chronic inflammation. So studies have shown that gluten can actually damage the intestine and make it leaky, activating inflammation. It can cause what's known as, like, quote unquote, leaky gut. So what happens is a protein in your gut called zonulin is increased by being exposed to gluten. The zonulin protein, it causes cracks in your gut, which allows bacteria and food particles to leak across the intestinal barrier. And undigested protein like gluten can leak across the gut barrier, and then they're exposed to your immune system. And immune system sees these proteins as an invader, and this is what leads to systemic inflammation. So if you're sensitive to gluten, every time you consume gluten, it can cause this inflammation to act up in your body. And then the adrenal gland interprets this as constant inflammation, as stress, and basically begins to produce a stress hormone, specifically cortisol. And instead of regulating the metabolism and producing the necessary hormones to make estrogen, progesterone, testosterone, instead it produces cortisol. And this inflammation impairs basically the insulin sensitivity in the body, damages the hormones that make that signal ovulation. All of these are really major factors in PCOS. So we want to reduce this systemic inflammation. And one way to do that is to reverse this process and cut out gluten if you are sensitive to it.
Right. And if you're not, let's just say you're not sensitive to it, is it necessary to still kind of eliminate gluten and dairy, or can one enjoy them in moderation?
If you're not sensitive to it, then I would say go ahead and have it.
Okay.
But if you are sensitive to it, only you would know what the definition of moderation is. So for me, I don't eat gluten at all. And then for dairy, I sometimes, like if I'm out and about once in a while, I'll have a little ice cream or something. I know I'll get acne, but it's okay. Like, it's not the end of the world. So I know my tolerance to gluten and dairy, but everyone's different. Some people re-add them back into their diet if they want to later on after a few months.
Yeah.
So you want to be aware of what's going on with your body.
Yeah, cutting it out for 30 days and seeing how your body feels really can really help you see whether you're sensitive to it, whether it can help your symptoms, because there's a lot of direct research showing that it can help with, for example, cystic acne. So if you have PCOS, if you have acne, you know, you can cut out dairy to see if it's going to help you there.
Right. And, you know, removing gluten and dairy from your diet is a major lifestyle change, right? It can also often get hard to kind of meal prep when your partner or your kids consume dairy and gluten. So do you have any suggestions on navigating that hurdle, since it's something that people are kind of hesitant about, especially, you know, it's such a major lifestyle change that to coordinate meals with every other member of the family can be really hard. So what suggestions do you guys have there?
Well, I do most of the cooking, and I feel like it's become really simple. So basically, I make meals that are healthy and gluten and dairy free. And then if Sirak wants to add cheese to it, that's fine. Or if he wants like regular bread for his sandwich, that's fine. You know, so it really depends on the dish. A lot of things can be tricked and manipulated into being gluten and dairy free, and nobody will even notice, you know?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And are there any other food items or ingredients that should be avoided aside from the ones containing gluten and dairy?
Well, we would say you want to target what's going on with your PCOS. So if you know you have insulin resistance, then you definitely want to avoid foods that are high in sugars. So I just combined food and sugar, foogers. you want to avoid foods that are high in sugars. So basically, foods that have a lot of added sugars, you want to avoid having a lot of fruit, on a daily basis. Fruit is very healthy, but, you want to limit your servings on a daily basis to make sure you're not having a lot of high amounts of sugar. So right. Basically, you want to be in charge of your insulin resistance. Like, that would be our number one recommendation as far as diet and lifestyle besides gluten, dairy free, is to basically be in control of your insulin resistance. Find the foods that keep it in regulation, and you really it takes time. Like, you won't be able to switch up everything in a day or two and be in complete control. It takes weeks, months to really know how to control your insulin levels, to really balance those numbers out, and then eventually you don't even need to think about it. Like, you already know by looking at your plate, how to fill it up, how much to eat. You don't even have to think about it. And it just takes time to really get there.
Right. And do you suggest, or do you think that is a vegetarian diet more favorable compared to a non-vegetarian diet, or does it not matter?
I don't suggest vegetarian for women with PCOS, but for some women, it's okay. It really just, you would know if it's working for your body. But typically, when women are vegetarian, we're eating more carbs in order to get our protein.
Right.
So there's protein in beans. So then you're eating more beans to get protein, but you're also having a bunch of carbs. So if that doesn't affect your insulin resistance and weight and so on, then that's totally fine. Like, if it's working for you, but it's not my go-to diet for women with PCOS.
Right. And is it worth tracking your macronutrients? Because I know we live in a very calorie-obsessed world. And
right.
Macronutrients are something a lot of the nutritionists are really focusing on and dietitians are focusing on. So is that also something that can help stay on track?
Yeah. So I suggest lowering your carbs a little bit at a time. And that's going to help you discover your carb tolerance. And so basically what you would do is track your carbs on an app and lower it a little bit. Start from like 150 grams and slowly lower to 120 if you need to. And what you're looking for is basically if you are having fatigue after your meal, that might mean it's a lot of carbs. If you're having cravings a couple hours after your meal, it might mean your blood sugar is going high and then low again, and you want more carbs. And so that means maybe you had too much for lunch, for example.
Yeah.
And so there's different triggers that will help you understand if you need to lower it a little bit. Mm. And once you're at your carb tolerance range, which for me is around 100, 120 grams, then you'll feel good and your body will be at the weight that you feel comfortable at without feeling restricted and miserable. It's really a lifestyle thing. You just get used to eating that much. Your eyes get used to that much on your plate. And that's the goal with PCOS, to create something sustainable, a lifestyle, something that's not so restrictive. Keto is often talked about, and it's just so low carb that, like, you can't do it forever. So.
Yeah, yeah. And we will talk about keto in just a second, because I've never understood that. I have recently started doing something called carb cycling, which I didn't even know what carb cycling meant. And I eat a regular amount of carbs throughout the week, which I don't even know at this point how much it is. My MyFitnessPal has the grams, so I can possibly give you more information. It's definitely more than what you talked about. Twice a week, my net carbs on 2 days a week is 50 grams. And that essentially is carb cycling. And I've heard that it has some really great benefits just in terms of shifting your body into a fat burning mode. And I'm part of this, fitness program and I'm trying it out. But it's really good to understand, even from your perspective, that trying to lower your carbs can help, right? So I think that is some level of validation from you, just because I didn't know what I was doing. So I'm a little relieved. And so, you know, we've talked a ton about how diet comes into play when managing PCOS. And Aileen, you were talking about physical activity and its importance and incorporating weight. So what are some of the things, if you had to list it, what are some of the aspects of this physical activity drill that should be kept in mind when trying to manage PCOS?
Well, when it comes to physical activity, one thing you want to, one thing we should talk about first is when, like, a lot of women with PCOS, they go to the doctor or they go to a personal trainer and they're trying to lose weight. The overall recommendation always just eat less, work out as hard as possible, focus on burning calories, and basically that you'll lose weight that way. Now, this can work for some people, but unfortunately, that it's more of a it's more based on short-term results, whereas what you really want to do is focus on the root causes of the PCOS weight gain and why it's difficult to lose weight with PCOS. It comes down to really three big pillars that we like to mention. The first being the cortisol dysregulation that happens with women with PCOS. Now, for many women with PCOS, they're struggling with their circadian rhythm, which is really important for basically almost every organ in your body to help regulate your hormones and so much more. So your circadian rhythm can be dictated by two hormones, melatonin and cortisol. And for a lot of women with PCOS, there's a lot of cortisol dysregulation happening due to the imbalance of hormones and other symptoms. So we want to avoid spiking cortisol levels because what happens is when you do an intense workout, for example, like a very intense kickboxing session or a HIIT workout, this will spike these stress hormones known as cortisol. And what happens is this cortisol is meant to help you perform better, meant to help you, you know, last longer and basically help with your overall workout. However, what happens is after your workout, you're not able to lower back down these stress hormones as easily as someone else might would. And what happens is these cortisol levels stay elevated. You wake up the next day feeling fatigued. Your body's basically doesn't have energy, or mood swings. And weight plateau and basically not seeing results with your workouts. So we want to avoid that cortisol dysregulation by avoiding workouts that spike the stress hormones. Second thing is to consider is insulin resistance. So when you do an intense cardio session, what happens is your body dumps a lot of sugar into your bloodstream to use for energy. When you have insulin resistance though, which 80% of women with PCOS have, what happens is the sugar is not able to easily convert into energy and instead it gets stored as fat. So that's why a lot of women, they go on these intense cardio sessions and they're trying their best. However, their results is not coming. It's either coming really slowly or not coming at all and they're stuck at that weight. So this could be another reason why. And the third is the metabolic dysfunction that's happening. So when you do an intense cardio session, it's great for burning calories. It does elevate your metabolism during that workout, but what is it doing anything else afterwards? Not really, because you're just burning calories and afterwards you have a meal as you should, and that meal most more than likely is going to be more than the calories you burn. Now you're probably still gonna maybe lose some weight short term, but overall long term it's not really getting down to fix the metabolic dysfunction. So how we can fix that metabolic dysfunction is focusing on the body composition. So studies have shown that when you increase lean muscle mass, when you add muscle to your body, your metabolism will permanently increase.
Right.
Studies even show that when you do a weight training session, your metabolism can stay elevated for up to 3 days, even when you're not doing anything. So, and the reason is because, when you have fat in the body, it just stays there. It doesn't do anything. The purpose is for storage. When you have muscle, even when you're not working out, even when you're just sitting at a table, working, your muscles need energy 24/7 constantly.
To maintain.
Yeah, exactly. So the more you have of lean muscle in your body, the more naturally your metabolism will be higher. So by increasing that muscle mass, you're helping to permanently increase your metabolism as long as you maintain it. So with that being said, we like to basically recommend weight training, and our method is called slow weighted workouts, where we incorporate light weights. So we're not trying to use heavy weights or bulk or anything like that. We're using light weights, going slowly, making it enjoyable, and we're addressing those three pillars of: one, keeping the cortisol levels down; two, helping to increase the metabolism over a long time to basically help you reverse those issues; and three, to help with that insulin resistance and help your body be more in control. Because even if you just increase your lean muscle mass slightly, it will help you with maintaining your insulin resistance when you're not even thinking about working out. Like Vitaly, for example, has told me several times, there's been a couple of times where she hasn't been able to eat due to like unforeseen circumstances, and she'll be like, wow, I feel like before I would have felt super hungry, I would have felt like lightheaded, but because we've been doing consistent workouts, I feel like a lot more in control of my cravings and like how I'm feeling. So it can help.
That's really interesting to know. Again, a huge source of validation, because I have incorporated weight training. So 10 points to Gryffindor. All right, I'm going to go back to carbs for a second, because I love carbs. I know, you know, we live in a world where, you know, carbs definitely have earned a bad reputation, especially on Instagram. Our world is driven by Instagram, you know, a world obsessed with moon juice and kombucha and mindfulness apps and charcoal water. What is charcoal water? So why are carbs an enemy? Like, why?
Because carbs spike our blood sugar. And so with PCOS, we want to have blood sugar control. And the easiest way to control it is to just stop eating the thing that's spiking our blood sugar altogether. And that doesn't mean that's the solution, but it's the easiest way to lower your carbs. So a lot of times people lower their carbs, you know, for a long period of time. Sometimes, well, I don't want to say everyone, but some people get pregnant doing that because their blood sugar is under control, their insulin resistance is better, and then their PCOS symptoms get better, and then they're able to get pregnant. Now, that's not everybody with PCOS. Sometimes it's stressful on your body, and it can cause more problems than solve them. So it's just the shortcut to managing insulin resistance, and it's not a long-term solution. And that's why carbs are the enemy.
All right. I'll think about this one. I'll think about this one. No, that makes a lot of sense. And you had also briefly, you guys were talking about kind of keto, and, you know, paleo is another one. Are those any good, or are they not?
Keto and what?
Paleo.
Paleo.
Well, when it comes to like any diet or like trend or anything, you want to think of like, can I do this for the rest of my life? Because when it comes to PCOS, we were talking about earlier, there's no cure. So you want to put it into remission and to keep it in remission. And the only way to do that is to do something that's going to be sustainable for the rest of your life. So when it comes to keto, it can help like some people with immediate results, because you're able to lower your carb levels immediately. And it helps with maintaining insulin resistance for a moment. But are you going to be able to do it for a long period of time? Because, you know, imagine not being able to eat more than 30, 40 grams of carbs for the rest of your life. That means no more pizza, no more bread, no more a lot of these different carbs. So we don't think that's really sustainable. I think paleo might be more sustainable because it doesn't limit carbs as much, I believe. But really, you want to find something that's going to be more balanced. And that's why we personally love going gluten and dairy free, because you're still able to find your carb range, your carb tolerance, if it's 80 to 100, if it's 60 to 80, you know, we help you discover that with our program. But besides that, like, you're able to eat what you want. You're able to live your life with the diet that you like, without basically restricting yourself. So when you're looking for when you're thinking about keto or paleo or anything for that matter, you want to basically make sure that it's something you can do for the rest of your life.
Right. Also, I have to say, Sirak, when you said keto, I heard Cheeto, and that's just my junk brain. I'm like, Cheeto diet? I like that.
I know.
All right. So another interesting trend that I've noticed is intermittent fasting, right? That's another thing that's really huge these days. And I practice intermittent fasting, but I've read mixed reviews. Many say that it works. Others say that there is no concrete evidence that it helps lower blood sugar levels. What, in your opinion, does it work? And if yes, how long should the fasting versus feeding window be?
Well, there are a lot of studies done on different ranges of intermittent fasting, and we can't say that they've all necessarily encompassed like 50% men, 50% women in the studies. So it's important to know that, you know, the more restrictive ones can be actually harmful for insulin resistance and women with PCOS. So what we do know is doing a 12-hour fast is great, and it's not as restrictive. So, you know, eating dinner at 7, eating breakfast at 7 and then dinner at 7 and not eating for 12 hours after that is ideal.
I mean, you want eating dinner at 7 p.m., not eating 12 hours until breakfast at 7. Yeah.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
We say that.
That's okay. We're all. Yeah, I'm not a math wizard at all. So, yeah.
But yeah, basically, like intermittent fasting, yeah, it can help. Like we've seen the 12-hour range be a good range, but when you get to like 14, 16, it can become more restrictive. And also, we've also ourselves learned just recently that a lot of the research studies that are done on intermittent fasting as well as keto and stuff, they're done on groups that are dominantly men. So you want to be careful when you're looking into studies and things of that nature to make sure that those studies include females as well.
Women,
because a lot of the positive research for intermittent fasting is actually composed of men. And also it doesn't usually include women who are in their reproductive age. So for some women who are in their reproductive age, intermittent fasting might have the opposite results. So you want to make sure it's right for you before you do it.
Gotcha. That makes sense. And on that note, I do 16-hour fasts. So I'm I am not checking any of your boxes right now.
If it's working for you, that's great. How do you feel? Just, I'm curious to know.
I would say that typically I don't really eat dinner beyond 6 p.m. just out of habit. Right. Mm-hmm. So 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. I'm usually sleeping. I wake up around 8. So it's usually I eat within 2 hours of waking up. So it's not so bad. But I'm most certainly not someone who could eat my dinner at 8 and then practice a 16-hour window. Right.
Yeah.
As long as I can kind of Mario skip and just sort of sleep through most of my fast, I think that's better. So I try to wrap up dinner by 6 and then, but not always. I mean, there are days when I feel like, no, I think I'm going out and I'm not going to wrap up dinner by 6. Then that's an exception. But it's also on the weekends I sleep longer. So then I just wake up late.
Yeah.
I mean, it's fine. It's fine. But, you know, I think everything that you guys are saying is very insightful. And, you know, every time you guys talk about symptoms, I'm like, oh, my God, I think I have this and I have that. And I also have this. So
it takes time to address each one. And I would highly recommend to look into a certain someone that we've been finding about recently. Her name is Elisa Vitti.
Okay.
Her last name is Vitti, and she talks about the infridian rhythm, and she was a person who was highlighting some of the research behind intermittent fasting not being for all women and things like that. So I think she's great too as a resource of finding more and more. So, but I think you're doing great, and it's just more about getting more and more with your diet and lifestyle. Like over time, you like modify it to make it better and better and better. So you're taking great steps. And as you find out what works better and better, you just modify it to make it adjust even better for you.
You're so positive. So positive.
Thank you. But I mean, it's you know, we're all trying our best and we're all trying to strive to be healthy as best possible. So I think you're doing great.
Absolutely. No, thank you. I really appreciate that. And I think another thing that I've always been really curious about, and I was like, oh my God, I have to ask Sirak and Thaleen this question is, you know, you mentioned in the beginning that not every woman who has PCOS necessarily has cysts, right? That's not an adequate indicator that someone has PCOS, because there are women out there who have cysts, but they don't necessarily have PCOS. So the fact that obviously something alien is forming in your body, right? These are fluid-filled sacs, essentially. Are there any risks associated with these cysts developing into something more serious in the future? And is surgery required sometimes, or can be completely skipped?
Well, you always want to have it checked to make sure that it's not something, you know, cancerous or something like that. But you can definitely reverse it without doing surgery. And if you have a control over your inflammation and your insulin resistance and your stress hormones, if you're doing the protocol to manage your PCOS, these cysts can disappear, because the picture of your ovaries change every month. And it's a reflection of how well you managed your blood sugar and how well you managed your inflammation over the past 3 months. And so what happens, that follicle, by the time it develops and matures and you ovulate, it takes about 3 months for that to happen. And within that window, you have a chance to manage your blood sugar, inflammation, all these things that affect whether or not that's going to, you're going to ovulate, or if that's going to turn into an ovarian cyst. So you have a lot of control over it. And yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes sense, because I do agree with you. A lot of the times people in my circle have gotten surgery done when really it could have been completely avoided, right? It has to be managed. They've been under minimal invasive surgeries, or, you know, sometimes they use laser to kind of pop the sacs. So, you know, and it has kind of worsened the situation. So, yeah, I completely agree with you. I also know that, you know, women with PCOS, you know, because there's such a hormonal imbalance that it leads to fluctuations in the mood. It often causes anxiety and, irritability. So what is that like? Why does that happen?
Well, when you don't ovulate and you're not producing enough progesterone, it's really going to have an impact on your mood. And that essentially is what's triggering, you know, mood disorders with PCOS. And also hyperandrogenism, high male hormones, can obviously suppress the ovulation and cause its own aggressive and irritating, like, person mood issue.
My God, I definitely need a checkup. I'm like self-diagnosing right now. Yeah, you guys, I'm honestly not sure. I probably need to get a test done, but this is helpful. It's helpful to know. And I'm so confident that everyone even listening, you know, can probably make some mental notes and just, you know, take the right steps, you know. So this is all information for us.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one, like, if you want to take one positive thing from PCOS, is that for a lot of women, it helps them find ways to take control of their body. Mm-hmm. And it teaches them how to basically read their body and basically act on it to basically improve their health. Whereas many other people who don't have PCOS, they may not have any idea what's going on with their body. They just go in with the flow. And if something happens, it happens. They just, like, don't really try it. But, you know, women with PCOS, you're fighters. You're able to read your body and help reverse symptoms by just making changes slowly over time. So, like, it just teaches you that thing where other people never get the opportunity to learn about their body. So that's one positive take from it.
Absolutely. You have to dig deeper and really understand what works for your body, right? And so what kind of solutions do you guys offer? And also, a second part to this is, do you guys suggest any supplements that can help?
Yeah,
we've designed our method that follows basically what helped me lose weight with PCOS, and also what helped a lot of my patients when I was doing one-on-one coaching. And that's how we designed our method. So basically, we have a membership site where women with PCOS can go in and have support while they're going through all the information that we provide in a very fun and informative way, just like our Instagram is fun and informative.
Absolutely.
So, see, that designs all these like videos and recorded me and everything.
Yeah, we have like step-by-step videos to help you learn about your PCOS, help you make changes slowly over time. We have like workouts, recipes, all this helpful. And we also have like 2 live calls that you can join with us every month. So that's our membership program. And we also have our meal and workout plan if you like to have something more that's
structured.
Structured and scheduled for you to follow step-by-step for a whole month, which you can always have access to forever. So that's also our meal plan. And both of those can be found on PCOSweightloss.org. And if you'd also like to listen to our podcast, it's a great podcast just like this one. And it's focused on PCOS-specific topics like birth control, metformin, hair loss, so much more. And that is called A Sister and Her Mister. Sister is spelled C-Y-S-T-E-R. So A Sister and Her Mister, basically available everywhere.
So clever. I just love it. I love the name of your podcast.
Thank you. Yeah, it's really important for one out of 10 women have PCOS. So it's really important to have a supportive community. That's why we created that sister sister name. Also, like, our membership is called The Sisterhood. So it's all about bringing women together because you're stronger in numbers. So
Very clever.
So when it comes to the supplements, though, I'll let Talia take this over. But we like to basically, we don't recommend taking like 100 different supplements. We like to base it specifically on your PCOS type. So if you have insulin resistance, then we would recommend an inositol supplement. One that we like is called Ovacetol. I'll let Talia explain it.
Yeah, Ovacetol, you know, one of my favorite supplements for PCOS is because it targets the insulin resistance and it helps heal it. And it's made up of a combination of inositols. Basically, there are studies that show inositol works just as effectively as metformin, and except it doesn't have all the side effects of metformin. So I really love a great inositol supplement. And Ovacetol has this 40-to-1 ratio of myo and dichiroinositol, and that mimics the same ratio that should be in your body. But because of insulin resistance, we don't have that ratio. And so that's causing a lot of problems. So when you take this supplement, it works super effectively in healing the insulin resistance and getting your blood sugar under control, and then helping with ovulation, egg quality, metabolism, being able to burn what you're eating instead of constantly gaining weight, you know, because of the insulin sensitivity that it's helping with.
Yeah. And it's also helping with the process of aromatization, which happens in the body, which is the process of androgens like testosterone converting into estrogen. So it helps with that aromatization process as well, these inositols.
So is it like a supplement that you can take even if you are not insulin resistant? Is it more like focused on wellness, or do you have to have a diagnosis before you start taking it?
You don't have to have a diagnosis. You can, it's not like a prescription drug, but you know, it is for insulin resistance. Yeah. It's not just like a wellness supplement. It's for insulin resistance, which is something that most women with PCOS struggle with.
Okay. And is this your product?
No,
this is actually a product that we're partnered with, because I was using it when I had PCOS symptoms. And then eventually I became a dietitian, all of this. And I thought this was the best supplement that I took. So why not partner with them?
The company is called Theralogics, and they make the Ovacetol. And we really like them because they have a team of medical doctors on their board, which really makes them very reputable. They're NSF certified, which means they're third party certified to be accurate and safe. So, and as Ty mentioned, we really like them because that's what she was taking in her PCOS journey. It's what really helped her for all those years. And we have, if you go to our Instagram, we have like a highlight section where you'll see all the testimonials of people who've taken it. And you'll also see our discount code there as well.
Gotcha. That's really helpful, because I think I saw something. I think I saw a link in your bio and I almost purchased it. And then I was like, let me first ask them what this is all about before I actually make that purchase. So that's really helpful. All right. So Talin and Sirik, we've actually reached the end of this episode. And this last section is also called the Share the Wisdom section. Honestly, it changes every week, so I don't even know what it's called anymore. but we end the episode with concrete advice, right? So what advice do you have for women with PCOS to help them manage their symptoms, even if they come from modest means, right? What are some of the basics or the essential rules to swear by that can help them lead a normal life?
This is a great question. I really stress blood sugar control. So whether or not you can get this supplement or, you know, if it's available to you, whether or not you have the supplement, you can still manage your blood sugar control by making sure that you're balancing your plate with protein, carbs, and fat, and knowing that you're not eating too many carbs. And you can track it in an app. You can see, you know, by measuring like how many carbs you're having in order to figure out if it's too much or too little. And basically you're your own doctor and you'll be able to feel what's right for you. So, you know, a lot of times we feel like we're waiting for answers from our doctor. We need a supplement, this, that, but you can actually heal your PCOS or see some great results by doing exactly that, by managing your carb tolerance and making sure that you're having a balanced, nutritious meal. And I post a lot of photos on Instagram stories of what I'm eating and how I balance my plate to give an idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Chirat, do you have one?
I mean, I would just add to exactly what Talin said, but just as a side note also to don't try to do everything all at once. Like, don't throw everything at your PCOS and see what sticks, because then you're not really knowing what's working, what's not working. So I know it's something you want to reverse immediately. You know, whatever the symptoms may be, I know you want to get rid of it ASAP, but think of it as a long-term approach. Think of it as, you know, trying a one thing at a time to see what really helps, and then building that arsenal to really have a full, different, you know, things that help with your PCOS. So just give it time, one step at a time, to see what's really working.
Love it. Thank you so much, Talin and Sirak. I think I personally really needed this episode more than anyone else. I definitely feel more educated and informed. I know for sure that I will be reaching out to you guys again just at a personal level, because I think I'm really intrigued by your program and how you run things. And again, this was, you know, a highly requested episode. So I hope that our listeners got the insights that they were looking for. And also to all our listeners, if you guys are looking for more information, make sure that you check out Talin and Sirak's website. That is PCOSweightloss.org. That's org. And they're also on Instagram, and their username is PCOS.weightloss. And just a huge shout out to everyone who tuned in. So don't forget to rate this podcast and subscribe. Oh my God, subscribe. And as always, yes. I will see you guys in the next couple of days. Till then, chin up.
Yeah.
Load it.